KCMO.
The following is a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of Cumulus Media and FM 103.7 and AM 710 KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk. Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Well, we didn't get blown away by the storm. Still don't have the electricity. It was serious. We're broadcasting in Kansas City, so just to give you an idea, Heartland here, and we're getting some really heavier or at least more damaging kinds of action after the storms. So hopefully everybody is okay by now, and your electricity is going to be on eventually, like ours. In the meantime, though, there's plenty of ice. So far, no run on ice, so not the entire city is struggling with this. But it's one of those things where timing for a vacation is perfect, because this is happening at the exact time that we're planning on eventually, you know, having a nice getaway. And in the meantime, all of the mayhem that we're going to have to recover from will be taken care of by then. That's the hope. Asgardia, the new space station, this is the one that they had the announcement earlier in the week about. I think 180,000 people are signed up to be citizens. The press conference Tuesday, they were saying what they plan to do next and who all's on board and coming aboard. And if you want to check it out, you can go to Asgardia yourself and find out more. They've got, or just do a YouTube, look at the stuff on the YouTube. I think it's fascinating because it's going full boat and they've got apparently plenty of money. They're not asking. Most times when people do stuff like this, they're asking, okay, please support us and we'll go as soon as we get the money. And if you're alive, you'll know. Fargo, North Dakota, Space Aliens Grill and Bar, getting rave reviews. This, if you haven't seen this one, the outside, it's got a great facade. It looks like you're stepping into some kind of a ship from maybe Battlestar Galactica or something like that. Anyway, cool place, good sweet potato fries, a lot of fun on a cold, rainy night. What happens is you're going to go in, and you go inside, and you're sitting at the rim of an indoor crater underneath a day-glow black-lit sky. Anyway, it sounds like fun. That's, again, Fargo, North Dakota, so a little bit of a drive. Just when you thought it was safe to go, the Blair Witch Project is a nice, long-term, way-back nightmare memory. UFOs and aliens reported in the declassified U.S. Forest Service reports. This is from the Tonto National Forest near Phoenix, and this report, because of the Freedom of Information Act, the guy who got it, John Greenwald, the Black Vault, has a ton of stuff on his site. Anyway, this supposedly happened in 2013. A guy, caller, said he saw construction cranes coming out of the sides of the cliffs, miniature stealth planes, UFOs, aliens, and people working together. This is like what they've reported seeing on Mars. He found some stuff, pictures, and said that he was 60, not crazy, doesn't do drugs. He'd already called the office at the lake. Not sure what that refers to. But he doesn't know if those people were turning the other cheek or maybe they've been paid off. Okay. Anyway, some interesting stuff on his site. And, go camping. Be careful. Look, just plan ahead. Okay. Other stuff on the haunted front. If you're interested, there's a nanny wanted for a haunted house in Scotland. The family says they only have reports of supernatural activities when they're away from the home. And they were told when they bought the house that it was haunted. But they have not experienced anything paranormal themselves. Five nannies who left in the past year would beg to differ. They are not staying. And there's no information on what they saw that made them leave, except that they do say that some people have told them, some of the nannies have said that furniture moves, knocking sounds, you know, your typical, it's a ghost kind of place. Anyway, if you're interested in that, you can check it out. I've got the link on wendyscoffeehouse.com. It's under Mashable. And there's some really fun stuff on the Magonia blog. This is like if Fortean anomaly content, all sorts of stuff. And you can start in with that on the Men in Black page, and then the Hit the Features page, you'll get all sorts of unusual and fascinating information there. Louis the Lobster, 132 years old and ready to go back. I guess he's already back in the ocean. 20 years he's been living in a little aquarium. And 4 years ago, the new owner who has released him bought the restaurant and said, you know, it's time. Louis can go home. And he's 22 pounds. And they said he lost one of his claws. They think he'll be okay. But the claw that he lost, they said it's because it's a lack of natural predators. So it just went away. But they are expecting Louis to survive and have a wonderful life under the sea. I'm singing. No, I won't. No, I'm not going to do that. Coming up, also have some, just wanted to give you a heads up on some of the guests coming up. Tonight, Russell Riniger, Overlords of the Singularity, is the book he's written. The deal is, he had an NDE, and this is a fantastic, it's not the one that we've heard before, at least I hadn't heard one of this sort. I've heard it in out-of-body experiences and things like that. But he saw himself when he was in that in-between state, and he had a conversation with himself and some friends. Anyway, the friends who were all living. So he saw a different version of each of them. Anyway, so that one is a really fascinating story. He's coming up. He's also written a book about it. So Overlords of the Singularity is the book, talking about these other lives, states of being right alongside us in this plane. Patty Conklin, medical intuitive and healer. She is absolutely amazing, and she's been compared to John of God. She's coming up 6:25. Garnett Schulhauser, I've talked with him before. He has a spirit guide named Albert who showed up one day in the flesh and convinced him that, yes, he was a spirit guide, and from then on they connected with Albert being non-physical, and he has taken Garnett on loads of fascinating trips beyond. So that one's also coming up July 2nd. And an intuitive, Wendy Coulter, she's currently working on her first book based on her experiences as a medical intuitive. And so she will be here then. And then my other one, I've done the floats with Floating Casey, and Frank Dorchak is a paranormal author. Sleepwalkers is one of the books. I put the link on that for the page too. And so he's going to be talking about what his experiences with the floats are like. And Floating KC, if you're local, you can try it out. They're going to give you a 30% discount if you say you heard it on KCMO. So that was one of the little cool things I got. But Frank has had these experiences too. And I tell you, it's just hard to explain. The one I'm experienced with is a room. It isn't the tank, and there's no claustrophobia kind of thing. It's a room. There's a lot of space. You go into some extraordinary states of meditation, relaxation. They recommend it. It's gotten a lot of rave reviews for people who have post-traumatic stress. And it's just a really a nice, easy, relaxing time. So anyway, he's going to talk about his experiences too, because along with floating, you also have some other kinds of anomalies that are worth sharing. And everybody has their own unique tale to tell. So coming up next, the guest, Russell Riniger. And we'll talk about his experience meeting himself in his NDE. Wendy's Coffee House. So many things to question. So many things that we would be better off if we just kind of stepped back a little bit before we had the answer, or went for the answer and thought, well, maybe what if there's another possible explanation. And sometimes the explanations just aren't exactly what you had hoped for, because they don't make any better sense. Disclosure, The Gift Project, Russell Riniger is on there, one of the YouTubes that you can watch about people who are talking about experiences they've had in either a near-death experience or an ET encounter, that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of information coming out now, and I think it's fantastic that people are sharing. And that this is a project that you can, if you've had these experiences, you can just say, hey, this is what happened to me, take it for what it's worth. But in addition to doing the video, my guest has also written a book talking about his incredible experience during an NDE, meeting himself, Russell Riniger. Hi there, Russell. Thank you. I'm glad to finally talk with you.
Hello. Glad to talk with you.
How did you get connected with Free to start out with, the group, the experiencer group?
It's through Facebook. I initially, when I wrote the book and published it, I put a little picture of the front cover on Sergeant Clifford Stone's wall. He was kind enough to let me do that. And then I was contacted by Dr. Sasha Lesson and Janet with Aquarian Radio, and we did a show on that. And then one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I'm in touch with all these Facebook experiencer groups, and I'm having a great time with it. And as you just said, it's pretty fantastic, you know, that everybody, we've gone from the age of ridicule and fearing for loss of job or loss of friends and family to saying, hey, there's something beyond all of our comprehension going on here, and we all need to talk about it because it's happening to millions of people.
Well, the name of the group, it's called FREE, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. Experiencer.org is how it started out. And I found out about it when they were originally, I talked with Mary Rodwell, and she's the head of the Australian UFO, basically. Anything that happens UFO, Mary was privy to. And so I had interviewed with her about 3 or 4 years ago. And then she said, I'm going to be part of this special group, and I can't say anything about it. It's hush-hush, but it's going to happen. And then when she said, okay, it involves and Edgar Mitchell and Rudy Shield, it's a lot of the people who have signed on are serious researchers, and they want to know as much as they possibly can the connections with somebody who has these kinds of experiences. And a lot of it, the thing that I, in my own experience, there was a lot of paranormal activity. Nobody ever talked about that. It didn't enter into it. I don't know if they just intentionally excluded it or it didn't come up. But that was one of the things that I thought was so refreshing, finally, to hear people talking about these other things that happened in addition to a sighting or an encounter. You know, that was, to me, a nice change of pace. And with your experience, it's very unique. From a lot of the people I've talked to, this is something that I've heard more about, you know, in an out-of-body experience. But so I guess, before I, you know, go too far, what happened to you that you are sharing with the video? Because this is, I think, a fascinating story.
Okay, well, I was just living my life as a material reductionist. I accepted the standard scientific paradigm for 54 years of my life that consciousness was a byproduct of the physical brain, and, you know, when you died, there was just unconsciousness, and that was it. And in August 18th of 2009, that completely changed. The day started out as a normal day. I went to work. I'm an occupational therapist in a nursing home, and I wanted to mow my grass when I went home. So I clocked out and went home and fired up the lawnmower, and I took about 15 steps. It was a nice hot day, and just was overwhelmed with a sensation of a really peculiar type of fatigue that I'd never felt before. And the first thing I thought was that I was dehydrated, so I just I stopped the mower and went inside and turned on the air conditioning. There was a little sensation of nausea along with it, and I was flip-flopping on my bed trying to get comfortable. And I started to feel a little bit better, and like a dummy, I went out there to finish the yard and pulled the string and took another 15 steps, and the same sensation came right back, only about 10 times stronger. And then because I have a background in healthcare, I mean, I figured out, it hit me, it dawned on me what was happening. I was having a heart attack. So I just figured I was a goner, and I had a strange sensation of curiosity, because even though I was always an agnostic and everything, I was still curious if anything lied beyond the grave. And since I was going to find out, I might as well just embrace it. So I started kind of circling around like a dog does in the grass when he's trying to do his business, because I didn't want to lay on gravel. And I just thought, you know, what a great day to pass, you know, because the sun was out and I was just going to lay down and, you know, find a comfortable place in the grass and go. And then something really strange happened and came over to me. I later learned that this is called, referred to as the Oz factor, but it was almost like I was, time was altered a little bit, and it was dead silent, and the car stopped, and the bird stopped, and it was just pure science. And it was almost like, it reminded me of a computer, like Googling Russ is dying into a computer, and then associated links started popping up, because these familiar entities started showing up around me. I didn't see them with my eyes, but I knew who some of them were, and I could sense a familiarity about them. And one showed up, and then two, and then pretty soon there was just a little collection. And the strangest thing of all was that one of the familiar entities that was with me, was a transcended version of myself, and that just kind of blew me away. And I instantly realized that there's only a portion of my consciousness invested in this earthly life, that beyond the veil, there's a timeless realm where, you know, you're aware of maybe everything you've ever been or everything you ever will be. I don't know the extent of it exactly, but as near as I can tell, it was a realm of sort of like intelligent lightning, where it was a collective consciousness field, and at the same time was able to individuate into personalities that I would recognize. And I was presented with a very strange feeling that they welcomed me with open arms, you know, if I decided to cross the veil. It was just, all I had to do is like walk through a sheer curtain and I'd be with them. And I knew it was permanent, you know, mm-hmm, as yeah. regarding to this life. But I got a strange feeling that this life is very valuable and very fragile, and maybe I should stick around a little bit longer. And one of the strange things is, among the many strange things, was that a strange girlfriend of mine that I had kind of not seen for about a year was one of the entities that was there. And it's like, wow, she's here too. And I was so fascinated by this whole experience that I just took a couple of seconds to think about it, and I decided that I wanted to live a little bit longer in this physical form with this new paradigm, you know, with this new, now that I know that there is definitely something beyond the grave, I wanted to live a little bit longer in this life with that understanding. So I just instantly decided to do that, went inside, got the keys to my car, and drove myself to the hospital. And I knew I wouldn't die on the way to the hospital because I just made that choice. And I just calmly handed the keys over to the guy at the desk, and he parked my car for me. And they put me in a wheelchair and wheeled me to a room and said that the hospital wasn't really designed to handle heart attacks, so they took me up to Ball. So back out in the sun I go on a stretcher and into an ambulance with the siren going. And then when I during the trip, it was interesting because there was a couple of EMTs there, and they were looking at my monitor with these worried looks on their faces, and I kind of felt sorry for them. So I told them a story of the previous weekend where I got bit on an ankle by a bee, and I heard the guy say under his breath, he'll think bee sting when he gets to that cath lab.
Oh.
And I didn't really know what he was talking about, but when I arrived at Ball, the doctors were ready to go, scrubbed up, and it gave me the choice between a quadruple bypass and a couple of stents, and I had them give me the rundown to it and selected the stents. So all this time, I'm thinking about this really oddball experience that I had, you know, as I approached this Y on the road, whether to go ahead and cross or stay here, and the stents went in, and I've been fine ever since.
See, that's what's so amazing, is that you were so coherent during the whole time.
Yeah, it was surprising to me because in the old paradigm, when you think death is permanent, you would think that when it actually came upon me that it would be scary, but mm-hmm. it wasn't, and especially when the cosmos kind of opened up for me and gave me a little glimpse of beyond the grave. You know, there's a lot going on the other side. And it really was a bewildering thing. And there hasn't been a day go by since 2009 that I haven't thought of that day and thought of that experience and wondered what the ramifications of it were. And it really prompted me on a journey into the researching into the paranormal and into UFOs. Anybody that researches the paranormal will eventually land on ufology because it's connected, intimately connected. You know, you run across books like Kenneth Ring, The Omega Project, where he connected the similarities between near-death experiences and alien abductions. And I'm kind of like, hmm. And what the sense that I get is that contact with non-human intelligences throughout the entire universe has already been made, but it's been made through the discarnate realm, and that's kind of surprising, you know, because everybody expects the flying saucers to land on the White House lawn, but they've already connected with humanity through a different aspect of their psyche in the discarnate realm, like in between lifetimes. And this would, to me, explain all the cases of children who say that, they are from the sky. And I know somebody in my family right now that's saying that. She's about 2 or 3 years old, and she talks about the sky people. And Sergeant Clifford Stone related to me his childhood experiences of having imaginary friends that appeared human, and then one of them showed his true appearance, and it was actually like a little green, gray alien-type creature that pointed out that he was from another realm.
We're going to stop right here. Got to take a break because this stuff's getting really good. All right, and we're going to continue with my guest, Russell Briniger. And what he talks about is even more fascinating with the UFO intelligences and the quest for transcendence. Next, Wendy's Coffee House. Stick around. KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, glad to have you along. My guest tonight has written the book Overlords of the Singularity, The Manipulation of Humankind by Hidden UFO Intelligences and the Quest for Transcendence. His experience with the NDE was just fascinating because, for one thing, you know, he's meeting himself. And that's, you know, a little bit disconcerting. Here I am, and you said you were a transcendent version of yourself. And the other thing, too, though, when we were getting into the conversation, we had to take the break. You were talking about the person who had experiences with imaginary friends or however you want to refer to it, and who then revealed themselves as being little green men.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so fascinating about this. You don't really, that's why I was at the beginning of the show saying some things we think we know the answers to, and then there's another element to it. The page turns and the answer we thought we had doesn't exist. This is what this is like.
Yes, it's very counterintuitive. And small children have just come from what we would call the discarnate realm, which is simply a larger reality beyond the physical universe. And they're still connected to beings and entities, human, non-human, or otherwise, that they were associated with somewhere within the super spectrum prior to this present incarnation. And this would explain a lot of phenomena like the Antonio Urzi case or the Dorothy Isaac case or Stella Lansing, where they seem to have some intimate psychic connection with otherworldly intelligences to the point where they can actually summon them at will, or make them manifest on film, or they explode into a million little light squiggles, in one frame of a Super 8 camera, all kinds of odd phenomena. And it was just amazing to me after my NDE, and I finally delved into the it started out, I went to a haunted house. A friend of mine who was an avid ghost hunter invited me to spend all night at the Rhodes Hotel in Atlanta, Indiana. And I went there and watched these guys with the EVP equipment and everything. And I have to admit, it was very uncanny, some of the words and things that were coming through. And then I read where Nikola Tesla actually made a spirit radio where he was trying to contact the discarnate realm electronically. And then you read about Men in Black stories where they interfere in telephone calls. John Keel tells a lot of experiences where he'd be out into a rural area, investigating Mothman sightings, and walk into a farmhouse, and all of a sudden you'd get a call with a mechanical voice on it. So non-human intelligences in some capacity or another can interface with electronics. And you read Timothy Good's book, Above Top Secret, and discover Jacques Vallée in Anatomy of a Phenomena and all the wonderful books that he's read. And it was an entire reality that had just bypassed me somehow in life. I call it crypto reality. Because it was there all along, but I didn't pay any attention to it because the prevailing scientific paradigm was that it was all nonsense. There wasn't anything to it. The Condon Report came out in 1969 and said it wasn't worth investigating. So I just never paid any attention to it. But since I've delved into the subject pretty deeply, there were several experiences that I had from childhood that now make sense, that had previously just been locked away in a little file in my brain as an anomalous thing that happened. I didn't have any frame of reference to explain it, but now I do. For example, in 1961, we were living in Merritt Island. I was 6 years old, and my mother put me to bed and turned out the light and everything, and she always left the bathroom light on. And two, what I would call, or what's commonly known as shadow people, showed up in my room and came over and kind of bent down and attended to me, and one of them looked to the other one, and then they just vanished. And out of all the memories, I don't remember much from my early childhood, like a lot of people don't. We all have a huge section of missing time from age 0 to 6, and maybe, you know, some scattered memories in there. But now that experience makes sense because in between lifetimes in the discarnate realm, they were probably just a couple of intelligences that I was associated then that just, like, stopped by to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in 1966, I had a memory that's still just branded in my head of walking down the driveway and looking up into the sky, and I saw 6 saucer-like devices just hovering there silently. And my reaction as an 11-year-old was to drop to my knees and cry because I wanted to go home, and I didn't feel like they were going to take me.
Yeah.
And all of my life, you know, I kind of wondered, did that really happen, or was that a dream? Then you read in 1966, the year that this happened, there was a great global UFO wave all over the world where people were reporting all kinds of stuff. So these types of little experiences that happened along the way suddenly make sense to you.
What's interesting, the timing when you're talking about this stuff. I know when the things started happening to me in 1997, as I have interviewed people since that time, there are a lot of people who have that same 1997 thing, and then there's the Phoenix Lights. And then in 2009, when you're saying August, well, my 2009 February and March was absolutely off the charts, things I still can't explain that happened. But this electronic thing's been happening for me since 1997, and it changed my paradigm and my whole life and the things I choose to do for recreation or for a career because of that mind-blowing shift of, wow, what the heck is really going on here? And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what it takes, is that kind of thing that says what you think is real is just one aspect of it. You haven't seen the next window, the next page, you know. And these dates, I think, in some way correlate with what else is happening on the planet, too, not just in our own neighborhoods, but all across, you know, the planet with other people having similar shifts. We just don't speak the same language to be able to compare. But you're doing your research, and what were you drawn to first when you you get out of the hospital and get together with the girlfriend you saw in the non-physical state?
Well, what happened there was when they carted me out of the cath lab with the 2 stents put in me, she was standing there with tears running down her face because they wouldn't let her in because she wasn't family. And I told myself, I've got to fix this. And 2 months later, we flew to Las Vegas and got married by Dracula.
Well, of course.
So we've been married for 8 years now, and it's been a wonderful thing to have accepted her in my life in that capacity. And, you know, I've learned a lot about commitment and patience and, you know, the things that you learn in a marriage. Because
mm-hmm.
I was always kind of, I guess, selfish in my relationship, self-centered. And that was one of the things that hit me when I had this choice of crossing the veils. I wasn't happy with my, for lack of a better word, karmic standing. There had been broken relationships and stuff that I really wanted to work on and fix, and that was one of the motivating factors to stick around. And since then, you know, I've worked on healing a lot of these things, and I feel like the next time that I've put myself down as a no code, if I'm ever unconscious and they can just let me go, fine, because I have no fear of death anymore.
Yeah.
And I know that that same little collection of people, maybe with some other people, will be there waiting for me to embrace me. And I've delved into the chemical aspects of this, too, because you actually doubt, you know, did this really happen to me? I mean, it's so extraordinary. And you, you know, the ketamine model and the flood of DMT and all that, it's
yeah.
like you wonder if, you know, that was some sort of hallucinatory experience. But I've ruled that out because we're actually living in a chemical reality. The entire physical universe is chemical. Our bodies are chemical. And I think Aldous Huxley was right, that our brains are actually a governor or a filter to block out an overwhelming amount of sensory information coming from the greater cosmos at large, because we're supposed to just focus on what's here. And if you alter the chemical cocktail in your brain, that enables you to experience and see certain things. So both of them are true. Yes, chemical changes happen in your brain, but these chemical changes are necessary in order for you to perceive an actual reality that's actually there. So both paradigms can kind of be right. That's the one thing that that hit me the most is different paradigms have a piece of the truth. For example, the skeptics say they don't believe in aliens because 100 million light years, you know, there's just no feasible way to get here from there.
Right, physical.
Well, they're correct if you're just talking about traveling through ordinary space-time. But post-singularity societies have figured out, you know, likely either a psychic or a technological way to slip into another realm and have access to anywhere in the universe they want to go, and then they can materialize in these physical realms at will. And that's why a lot of the UFO encounters, you know, you see them just kind of like blinking on and off, or, you know, a structured metal craft would be seen, and it's like somebody turning off a light bulb, you know, it just slips into another dimension. And I think a lot of them are hyper-accelerated. time itself can be quantified in the quantum realm down to Planck time, and there's more Planck units in a second than there were seconds since the Big Bang. It's a very small increment of time, but I sense that some of these intelligences have figured out a way to travel in bundled Planck time to where they would be invisible to us because they're running the frames, you know, at a different rate than what we're perceiving it. And if they slow it down, you know, like the Turkey UFO sighting has been authenticated in several labs in multiple countries. I mean, that's a for real event. And they appeared in the same time in the same place, you know, for a couple of years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be doing exactly the same thing. So it appears that they're traveling through bundles of Planck time or bundles of frames of how we view this reality. And by their clock, it might have only been, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, but by our clock, it's 3 years. So time itself is fluid. Time doesn't flow on Jupiter as it does on Earth and in the farthest reaches of the galaxy or the universe, you know, no telling how time is moving.
Well, and that's the cool thing about this is that we aren't, I don't think, on the same page in terms of the math. When I had my experience, the first thing I was absolutely driven to do was to get into string theory. Oh, you know, like, whoa, what? And I had never had any kind of interest in that at all, but big time, string theory, what was going on, you know, black holes, how did they work? All the stuff, the quantum universe, all this stuff all of a sudden became a very urgent thing that I needed to study. And so I looked up Brian Greene and Lee Smolin and Michio Kaku. I was all these things was like, there's something going on here and the math is a key, but I don't understand enough of it to make it go from point A to point B. And that's part of it is because we aren't there yet. We're studying stuff that I had information on 20 years ago. 1998, and I didn't believe it then because I don't know math, but then as this stuff has come through with the black holes that Mr. Hawking's been talking about, it's like, oh my gosh, we keep continuing to expand and evolve, and these folks are trying to, in my experience, trying to give us little nudges and whatever it takes in terms of a carrot to get outside the box and start playing instead of just, you know, saying, oh, this is impossible. Well, you don't know until you try.
Right. Yeah, my experience is similar. Prior to my NDE in 2009, I might have been somebody that read one book a year, if that.
Mm-hmm.
And since 2009, it's been at least 300. And I kept going to Walmart to buy bookcases. they saw me coming, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I started with Jacques Vallée. I've read Brian Greene's book, The Elegant Universe.
Yes.
Everything that Michio Kaku ever wrote, you know, is in my head now.
Is it David Deutsch?
And the nice thing about
Parallel
it is,
Universes?
It's over your head, but you read it anyway.
Yes.
And then, like, the second or third time through, it starts making sense.
Yeah.
And the first time that in Parallel Worlds, Michio Kaku explained all the different parameters that had to be in place exactly at the Big Bang for this universe to bear life, you know, epsilon, omega, lambda, and DQ, with explanations of why that couldn't in and of themselves, they couldn't be random, but all six together, it's scientifically impossible for this to be a random universe. It was done with intention, but we're still left. Whenever somebody concludes that the universe is intentional, they like to plug in their favorite deity. And I've got an encyclopedia of gods that has 13,500 of them in it. So which one are you going to pick?
Okay, quit that. No. Now you're bursting a bunch of paradigms. Hold on. Okay, we got to take a break too, but we're going to come back. ET factor, the manipulation that you suggest, okay? That. So let's kind of let's tweak that next, all right? On
sure.
Wendy's Coffeehouse, my guest, Russell And it's just one of those things. Russell Brinegar has a lot of questions and some potential answers. And, you know, if you're curious, you might find them fascinating. Stick around.
I'm waking.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. A whole lot of waking up going on. And it doesn't happen the way you think. But it sure is cool. So my guest has a book that is absolutely, I'm going to make you question what you think you know. Overlords of the Singularity, the Manipulation of Humankind by Hidden UFO Intelligences and the Quest for Transcendence. And so it doesn't hurt that you had this mind shift that kind of kicked you in a completely different frame of mind and questioning your reality with that near-death experience, seeing yourself in a transcendent state. So where did the ET factor come in?
Well, the ET factor came in following my experience in the haunted house. I investigated ghosts, all kinds of ghosts, historical hauntings, tulpas. That led into the Islamic jinn, the elementals that possibly exist in the atomic spaces in air, earth, fire, and water.
Yeah.
Various cultures have reports of interdimensional entities that people, you know, report appear to them. Mm-hmm. You know, Muhammad met, allegedly, you know, the angel Gabriel in a cave. So just about every culture on earth has these non-human apparitional type entities appearing to them. And then ran across a guy, John Eric Beckjord, who was kind of lampooned in his day for thinking that Bigfoot was an interdimensional. And I get into cryptids, you know, like Bigfoot, the Loch Ness, and you find out that all of these are associated with luminous disks or luminous orbs.
Yes.
And you discover a huge metaphenomena that's going on. And then it was just like a couple of little following the yellow brick road, ghosts, elementals, djinn, demons,
Bigfoot,
UFOs, boom, you know, and mm-hmm. it's all interconnected.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, wait a second. There's something else happening and we're not able to see. And even, you know, beyond the veil, there are other veils. There are multiple levels of reality right here. And I've experienced time shifts, things when you walk from one part of the room to the next, and all of a sudden the reality is different. That is mind-boggling. And you're talking about that same kind of thing.
Right. Jenny Randles has a good book called Time Storms about that. She believes that there's actually a natural phenomenon on the planet that can cause episodes of missing time or transport people to other dimensions and back. So there's a lot going on that we just don't have a grip on at all. And the scientific, predominant scientific paradigm hasn't been of much help. Whitley Strieber just wrote a book with Dr. Jeffrey Kripal called Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Jeffrey Kripal said the biggest mistake of the scientific community was the rejection of the anecdote. Because if you go to a court of law where somebody's on trial for murder, you're going to be asked to look at circumstantial evidence, trace evidence, eyewitness, credible eyewitness testimony. And you're talking about somebody's life, you know, in some cases, whether to execute somebody or not. So using that same criteria of credible eyewitnesses, radar reports, videos, you can conclude, as much as we can know anything, that there is a core reality to the UFO phenomena, that this is actually happening. Our airspace is being interceded from intelligences that are non-human, where they are from, whether they're extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or both, is you know, up for grabs. We don't really know that yet. Maybe somebody does on the planet, but I don't. I suspect they're interdimensional, and I think there's probably both out there. Morris K. Jessup wrote The Case for the UFO and The Expanded Case for the UFO, and reading those books pretty much convinced me, along with Hans Holzer's book, The Ufonauts, that there are both flesh and blood populations that have some interest here. Some may be based underneath the sea and have no interest in humans whatsoever. They're just studying sea life. You know, you've got the mystery submarines. Russia has a lot of reports of mystery submarines that they catch on radar and then they just vanish. And then you've got the Shag Harbor incident, where a Russian submarine and a United States submarine was chasing two underwater USOs, and then they exit the ocean and fly into outer space. So I started out very naively thinking that I was just going to document for myself every UFO counter that people have reported since around 1947.
Oh, whoa. And ambitious.
You realize about 150 cases into it that it's an impossible task, that there's actually thousands of them. And I had no idea that it was that overwhelming. I mean, the evidence for the UFO reality is so overwhelming that it's just amazing to me that I bypassed it completely for 54 years of my life. But I'm glad that I stuck around after my NDE because I'm connected into the so-called UFO community and the experiencer community, and I'm meeting some really fascinating people. And, you know, I'm still learning and I'm still growing, and, you know, I think I made the right decision.
Well, and that's a thing. There's something else to live for. There's this question, this mystery, this enigma that is in some places, you know, in full plain view. This isn't hiding. It's just a matter of how big your denial is. When you say no and it's impossible, then you limit the options. And once you say, well, what if, maybe, you know, then there's an open door. And it doesn't make you stupid and it doesn't make you gullible. It makes you curious. That's it. One way or the other, curious. And that's what I find a lot of people who've had these experiences become a lot more curious about life and willing to say, well, maybe I don't know and I'm going to explore a little more. I'm glad you've written the book. I didn't have a chance. I got to do the preview. We have no electricity. So I waited, and I have seen your video on YouTube, and I would, you know, I recommend that for anybody wanting to get started. But the book, Overlords of the Singularity, and I got a couple of reviews, decent reviews, so I'm excited to see, you know, the work that you continue with this.
You were asking before the break about the manipulation factor. And through all the UFO researchers like Jacques Vallée and John Keel and so many others, they're all scratching their head because it seems like the progression of human technology seems to be part of the purpose with some of the intelligences that are interacting with us. And if you read William Bromley's book, The Gods of Eden, he started out researching the underlying causes of war, and what he thought he was going to find was real mundane elements, you know, like poverty or territorial acquisition and all that, but he actually identified two extraterrestrial forces interacting with humankind. One of them really doesn't care a whole lot for us and has an agenda of its own, and we can get into that later. And then the other maverick race, which he includes Jesus in the maverick race, has our spiritual welfare at heart. And if you look at the old Hermetic axiom, as below, so above, there's this wishful thinking on our part that once you reach a certain progression that you become all loving and all benevolent. But even in the other realms, there's what we would call good and what we would call evil. And it's almost like we're in the middle of a proxy conflict where they're looking for recruits. And we're here to make a decision, you know, sort of like Star Wars, you know, you want to go with the forces of light or, you know, follow the forces of darkness. And
yes.
In the larger aspects of the super spectrum, there's fantastically intelligent cosmic beings that are on both sides of the fence.
Hey, and, we got to go. Yeah. We got to go. Russell, we got to talk again, okay? So
okay.
I'm bookmarking you. We're going to talk again. This conversation will continue. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend or week. Till next time, see ya, Wendy's Coffee House.